It's a bit of psychology, a bit of economics, a bit of programming. And the culmination of all of that is hopefully a website that converts the largest number of people to shoppers.
Well, that's my guest, Lou Doctor. Lou runs a company called Velotech, and it's all about e-commerce. And Lou, I've known him for 20 years, and I'm delighted to have him as a guest on the show today. 20 years is a lot of time. I can speak to some of the work that we've done together. He was on my board of directors for the better part of a decade, years ago in the 80s and 90s. I had a software company partly based in Southern California, partly based in New York City. Lou helped me grow the business, helped me close my first several big deals. And we're going to talk about that and his other endeavors on the show tonight. And you're listening to CDM Cyclist, and I'm your host, Frank Peters. And a special interview tonight. This is not your neighborhood bike store, so I'm bylining tonight's show. It's done so many things, like I hinted at a minute ago, a fantastic deal maker. Lou helped me close my first $100,000 software deal years ago. I remember celebrating one weekend out in La Quinta, out in the Palm Springs region. And the party that night titled, Thanks a Million Lou, after he helped me close my first $1 million software sale. Yeah, he was great working with me on those enterprise software sales. Eventually, we sold the company. And Lou, of course, went on to do many things. Had his own M&A firm in Palo Alto. But he's on the show today for his work in e-commerce, and that's what we're going to get into and talk about tonight. I went up to visit. I had this appointment just last week's show, Colin Cooper, Hillsboro, Oregon. I was going up to interview Colin regarding the new bike station. And I called Lou up, and he said, do you need somebody to pick you up at the airport? And I said, no, I'll take a cab, and I'll meet you later. Well, He texts me as soon as I land, says he's on his way to pick me up, get in his car, and he says, I know you're going to want to go right out to the warehouse. So he does. He takes me out to biketiresdirect.com, the warehouse, to check that out. It's a very impressive operation. And we hop in the car and we go to golfclubs.com and check out their store and warehouse as well. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's let Lou tell it.
Oh, hi, I'm Lou Doctor from Velotech.
And what is Velotech, Lou?
Well, Velotech is a company up in Portland, Oregon. It operates a bunch of websites in the cycling accessories business. And so we sell direct to consumers, kind of a mail order business for parts and accessories and apparel for bicyclists.
And it's a lot more than bicyclists. You're building a little e-commerce empire here, aren't you, Lou?
It's the beginning of an empire, yeah. It's a good start.
Golf clubs and darts appeal to me as well.
Yeah, so we've got the company called Velotech that operates in the bike business. We have two other companies, one called Billiards.com, Inc., and that runs, obviously, Billiards.com, but also, most recently, Darts.com and PoolCues.com. And then we have golfclubs.com, Inc., which obviously runs golfclubs.com and has a retail store and a warehouse and operates the e-commerce website in golf.
You didn't exactly start out with a business plan, did you, Lou?
Yeah, I don't think anybody grows up deciding that they're going to be the number one retailer for bicycle tires on the internet. I think you have to stumble upon that. And in our case, it was another one of those accidental opportunities. I was in a bike group in the San Francisco Bay Area, four guys, and we were all friends and cheapskates. And when it came to buying products for our bike, we always went on the internet and shopped around. This was about 10 years ago, where online shopping was a little more unusual than it is today. We actually found a bike shop in the UK, in England, that sold the same bike tires that we all used on our bike. From the UK, they cost about $30 a piece. We were paying about $40 in the store, and we used them often enough that it made sense to buy them in bulk, so we bought 10 of them. Everybody used them up and put them on their bike, and then eventually, 6 months later, we bought 10 more. The second delivery was shipped to us in the wrong color. Nobody wanted to put them on their bike. It was an ugly blue-green color, and bicycle riders are quite fashion conscious. So
well, it wouldn't match your helmet, right?
Yeah, exactly, or your frame or your trim. So my son Nathan at the time was 12 years old, and he was piddling around on eBay, and I gave Nathan the box of 10 tires and asked him to sell them on eBay and told him that my cost on them was $300, and if he made any money on them, he could keep the money he made. And a month or so later, he had sold the 10 tires for $350, so he made $50, which for a 12-year-old was a lot of money at the time. And he said, "Dad, next time you're ordering tires from Europe, get me 10 more too." And so, of course, we did, and 20 became 50, became 100, became 500. And during the course of the first summer, we set up a website to sell them, not just on eBay. And at the end of a full year of operation, we had shipped $1 million worth of bicycle tires from the parking space in my garage.
Wow, that's a lot of inventory. How did the garage look during this process?
It was pretty much wall-to-wall. It got to the point where my wife couldn't park in the garage either. By that time, the orders were coming in so fast that we had to rope my younger son into it. Zach at the time was 11, and Zach and Nathan did the shipping, 10,000 orders in the first year. They had quite a system they had perfected. They would pack the tires in priority mail envelopes and slap labels on them and then bring them down to the post office at the end of the day. And the post office got to know us. We became the second biggest shipper in our town. And so we, every day we're dropping off 50 to 100 packages and loading them up in the back of the priority mail truck in the evening and seeing the truck off. And it was a lot of fun. And it was a great bonding experience, but eventually it got too much for kids that were in middle school and high school to deal with.
Did you get phone calls from the principal?
No, actually what happened was my wife came into the garage one morning around 6 a.m. and my younger son, Zach, was in tears. I was staring at a wall of tires and crying. And my wife said, "Zach, what's the matter?" And he said, we're not going to be able to ship all the orders before we have to leave for school. And she walked out of the garage and came up to me and said, "That business had got to get out of the garage." and I tried to explain to her the merits of child labor and how we weren't paying them anything. And we had made so much money this year, and she didn't want to hear anything of it. And so a friend of ours was moving up to Portland, Oregon that summer, and she was looking for something to do. So she got trained by the boys as to how to run the business. And as they say in the Beverly Hillbillies, we loaded up the truck and we moved it up to Portland. And it's been operating out of a location near the Portland airport ever since.
This just took right off for you. You just hit a market. Perfect timing, was that it?
I think there was a bit of perfect timing. There was a bit of, I guess I would call it just the connection between the internet emerging as a shopping platform at that time. People were actually going online looking for things. Prior to Google, most of the internet searches took place on Yahoo. They had acquired a company called Overture that had a platform for bidding on search terms. That was the first paid search platform. And we just went on there and started bidding on search terms like bicycle tires and Continental Grand Prix 3000 and Michelin Pro Race and the kinds of tires that people wanted to buy. And the connection between those clicks and people buying was pretty direct. There weren't that many choices for folks. And, we emerged as a fairly large retailer fairly quickly.
Lou, Overture or today Google, tell me more about that process.
Yeah, well, if you think about the buying process, very often people will start doing research, so they'll decide that they want to buy a golf club or a pool cue or tires for the bicycle. And, they may do some reading online on kind of review sites. So very often people start by typing, bicycle tire reviews. Then they start to narrow it down to a brand. So they might start typing, Continental bicycle tires, and then they might narrow it to a model. They might type Continental Grand Prix 4000. By the time they get to a model of a product, along with the manufacturer name, you know, very often they're ready to buy. So at that stage, they're pretty much doing comparison shopping, and we need to offer up that product at a competitive price. But also, as they say in life, you only get one chance to make a first impression. It's very important that the page that they land on when they click on an ad or click on a Google listing is welcoming and credible and makes them want to buy. And so we spend a lot of time just looking at those pages and trying to figure out how to make them better. One thing that we've learned about the internet is you should never presume that you know how people are going to react to things. There's small changes can make big differences in how often people convert to a sale. And so you're constantly experimenting. And on many of our websites, we're running two or three versions of each page at different times and seeing which one does a better job converting people to customers. And then we'll ultimately switch over to that page until somebody gets a better idea of something else they want to try it and try to make it maybe even operate a little bit better.
Well, that sounds like kind of a fun job description to be constantly. This is like real-time manipulation of analytical information. Is that kind of close?
Yeah, I think it's actually one of the most interesting intersections of art and science, really, because you have art in terms of graphic design and color schemes and having the stuff tie together and not look hideous to the eye when people land on the site. And I think that's part of the credibility side and the trust building, in a sense. People have to land up on a website, and it has to look like it's been in business for a long time and that a lot of other people have shopped there. And then the science part, of course, is realizing that, the difference in the color of a button or the placement of a button may make as much as a 10 or 20% difference in the number of people that buy that product. And so you're constantly looking at the statistical results of these landings of people and how they behave, and trying to steer them in the direction of the behavior that you want. And so it's a bit of psychology, a bit of economics, a bit of programming. And the culmination of all of that is hopefully a website that converts the largest number of people to shoppers.
And then after a visit or two, people bookmark the site. And does that change the order process as well?
Yeah, I think that's part of the beauty of it is that time works in your favor. In a sense, you're not paying rent for your website. I mean, you obviously have monthly fees, but the reality is that people have a much higher likelihood of buying from someone where maybe 6 months or a year prior, they may have landed up on that site and decided to buy the product from someone they had bought from before. But maybe the next time they land up on the site, they say, I ought to give those guys a try. And they're a lot more willing to take their credit card out that second time. Now, what that says is you still have to offer up the right product at the right price, but you may not have to offer as much of a discount maybe that second time. And the same is really true for repeat buyers. I may have to offer you 10% of a better price than anybody else to get you to buy from me the very first time, but maybe that second time the number is 5%, and the third time I just have to be at comp with everybody else. So you have a way to sort of make back that margin that you might give up on the first sale over the lifetime relationship with the customer.
A lot of times people talk about the cost of acquiring a customer. You know that to some number of decimal points, Lou.
Yeah, we not only know that for the whole website, like how much do we spend this week and how many customers did we get, but we know it down to the granularity of every single search term, so that if someone types, Mavic Caesarium wheel set, I can tell you that it will cost me $30 to sell that guy a wheel set. And if they type, Giro bicycle gloves, it might cost me $6 for that sale. And based on the margin that you make on that sale, you can determine how much you can afford to bid for that traffic. And then you can hopefully, by improving the performance of the website over time, be able to bid more and more and become like a prominent number one listing. And when you're in the number one slot, say on Google, you typically get as much as 10 or 20 times as much traffic as in the number 5 or 6 slot. But in order to maintain that number one position, you have to be able to profitably convert the traffic.
So we're talking about really the internal workings of an e-commerce site. How does all that translate to like a greater sense of customer satisfaction, though? I'll bet it does.
Yeah, I mean, I think that fundamentally people are limited in terms of time and money. And I think if you can be give them a degree of efficiency in finding things on your site, or let's just say finding what they were looking for when they went online, they appreciate that. And so that also comes down to how the site is organized and how the products are displayed. And, you know, we found things like the number of products per page that you show somebody when they're searching for things makes a big difference as to how much they buy or whether they do buy or not. And, you know, you might look at a page and just from an aesthetic point of view, see, you know, maybe 12 products looks the best, but you may find out that 24 products actually makes you a lot more money. So sometimes the financial terms have to override the aesthetic terms. And you also often find very ugly websites that do extremely well. And I think there is probably an element where, depending on what they're selling, the ugliness might even work to their advantage.
Isn't that almost counterintuitive in a way?
Yeah, I think if you really are a deep discounter, I think if you have too professional looking a website, people assume your prices aren't that good. But if you look like you're in the business of liquidating stuff at low prices and you look like it, then, you know, probably all fits together.
So this sounds a lot different, the issues you're dealing with, than the experience I imagine that's happening when you walk into a bricks and mortar retailer. It's a world of difference, isn't it, Lou?
Yeah, I think that there are some similarities. You have a limited amount of time and shelf space to impress somebody to make a sale. So that first impression is important as well. I mean, of course, on the website, you can have a virtually unlimited number of products. But I think that actually gets to a point where it becomes detrimental also. I mean, Amazon is a great case where I think if I'm looking for a book and I know exactly what I'm looking for, I'm looking for a toaster oven and I know the model number, going to Amazon is a great way to make that purchase. I think if you don't know exactly what you want, maybe you're deciding between two brands, or maybe you want to see the selection of a given manufacturer's product offering in an area, I think Amazon's a terrible place.
Or an example just comes to mind. I had to buy a wedding gift a little while ago. Well, I don't know where to start. So a bricks and mortar store would maybe suit me in that situation.
Yeah. Or even a site that was dedicated to helping you make a gift selection like that. Whereas I think, you know, for the most part, I think the internet is a demand fulfillment vehicle, not a demand creation vehicle. A lot of times people come to me with a great new product. It's just a phenomenal product idea. And their idea is to set up a website and sell it direct. And my reaction to that is you can't create demand for a product by putting it on a website. There's so much more to getting people to want to buy it that the last thing you have to worry about is having them be able to check out online. You know, you really need a strategy for creating buzz and awareness, and the internet, I think the new social media frameworks are better for that than just plain e-commerce.
That's an interesting point, Lou, as it relates to Bike Tires Direct. Driving traffic, you're intercepting a lot of traffic.
Yeah, I think that there's an opportunity to build a sense of community around, you know, the Facebooks and the Twitters of the world. I mean, we have a lot of Twitter followers for Bike Tires Direct, and we actually post our deal of the day. So we've got a product that we always take another 10 or 20% off and every day put it into a little section of the website. And several thousand people every day follow that on Twitter, and a bunch of people buy it every single day. And I think without a one-to-many broadcast medium like that, whether it's email or Twitter, it would be hard to communicate with that many people. Similarly, I think Bike Tires Direct and Facebook is the same kind of thing. You can build a community around that. And Facebook does a great job at helping stuff spread virally, which is why I think it's so successful for some businesses.
So, Lou, you have only recently moved to Portland. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, over time, more and more of my own personal activity has moved to Portland. I've had the websites up here for a while, the bike business and then the billiards business. It was a logical place to put the golf club's business. And then I had a group that did all the software for the websites down in Mountain View, California, close to where I was living in Los Altos. And it was a couple guys. They were single. They were unattached. We decided we wanted to hire two more people. And we looked at the job market in the Bay Area and the job market in Portland. And I said to both of these guys, look, if I pay you the same amount as I'm paying you now, but we moved to Portland, would you be up for that? And both of them said yes. So we rented out.
That was a good deal for them too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, they were based, now they have the benefit of earning Silicon Valley wages in Portland, but I have the benefit of hiring the next two or three or four people at a much lower salary base. But it's not just the salaries. I think it's a quality of life issue too. There's a great community of young people here. It's a very athletic, outdoorsy kind of a city. We're in the business of selling sporting goods on the internet. It's very logical to be here.
How are you enjoying your recent move up here?
We really like it. We moved the family up. We actually sold our family home on the peninsula, moved to a high-rise apartment. Downtown living in Portland is great. It's a great city for bike riding, for foodies, for book buying, for, you know, so many things.
Hard to argue with that, huh?
Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, there is a tendency in the San Francisco area in particular to be a bit of a wine snob, with Napa Valley across the Golden Gate Bridge and, you know, the big Cabernets and Chardonnays. And I think you come to Portland, you develop a taste for Pinot, and then you never want to go back to Napa.
So how big is the company now? How many employees, Lou?
So the bike business has almost 20 people in it right now. It's a little under $10 million in annual sales. The billiards and golf and software companies together have around 10 people in them, and each one is in a different stage of development. But combined together, I think, together with the bike business, we'll do about $15 million in combined sales next year, and hopefully $20 to $25 million the following year.
And you're running these businesses on the internet very efficiently. The future looks good. Huh? More people riding bikes, demographic trends in your favor?
I think the trends for more and more online shopping are clearly working in our favor. I think the ability to run a business now, there was a time where I was just flabbergasted I could run the business on my laptop, and now I show people I can run it on my iPhone. It's even better. So now I don't even have to be connected. I can basically be on a bike ride. I can take out my iPhone and hit one button, and I can see the sales across all of the websites in the last hour while I was riding, and make sure everything is running well. And you know, I don't think I would probably try to really dig in and do a lot of detail work on that, but in terms of monitoring stuff, it's terrific. I mean, my partners and I, we can be sitting around sometime. We'll start seeing the texts light up on our iPhones. You know, one of the websites went down. You know, the ISP, hosting provider is telling us that there's a problem. So I think it's great to have all of these stores out there, but with nobody actually standing in them waiting for customers to walk in the door.
Very efficient, very modern business you've got here, Lou. It's exciting. And I've palled around with you the last 24 hours. I've seen you on your iPhone and seen those screens pop up. It's a great way you've built your business here. Yeah. So how about in the short-term future, Lou? What's coming up next?
Well, we're always looking at new sporting goods categories. One area of at least the biking business that has been growing very quickly is the triathlete. The demographic of the triathlete now is actually quite a bit older than it was before. It's now kind of a middle-aged sport.
Kind of keeping up with your age, huh?
Yeah. So what we find is that the people that are getting into triathlons that are middle-aged have the disposable income to buy a nice bike and buy swimwear and buy footwear that are, you know, high-end. And so we are looking at dedicating some resources to a triathlete's website coming up. And right now we have one physical location in Portland that represents the bike shop for Bike Tires Direct and our other website, Western Bike Works. And in the next 6 months, we're going to be scouting out locations for a second store in Portland for the Western Bike Works store. And so we're looking forward for next year to be able to open that shop.
That's going to be a retail outlet, Lou?
Yeah, that's right. It'll be a fairly large kind of destination bike shop with a cafe, and probably with what we call a store within a store for different segments of the bike business, like cyclocross or urban or triathletes.
Yeah. It'll be the kind of place that people want to come to after a ride, maybe, and hang out for a while.
Yeah. I think it's, I think that's the trend, is be able to put a barbecue out in front of your bike shop and get riders and get a liquor license and serve beer.
Barbecue and a keg, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's the way to offset all the good that you did on your bike ride, but still enjoy the day.
And yourself, you're enjoying riding around Portland? It's a platinum city. It's like the best place to ride a bike.
Yeah, it, you know, if I compare it to the San Francisco Bay Area where I lived on the peninsula, it is a little bit more urban than I'm used to. So I do find myself a little bit, little higher anxiety level just because of the traffic when you're in downtown. The hills in the Bay Area are quite nice, and we've got some nice hills here that I'm starting to sample. The Springwater Corridor and some of the other like bike paths that have been developed are really terrific, and I do appreciate the markings on the road and the fact that the drivers are so respectful of the bikes. And if you're a respectful bike rider, you can get along very well in Portland, I think.
So you're going to stay?
We're looking forward to staying, yeah.
All right, Lou. Good luck to you with your businesses. And for my listeners, which site would you like to direct them to, Lou?
I think if they're looking for just the smattering, they can visit the mall, Bike Tires Direct, Western Bike Works, Billiards, Golf Clubs. If they have a particular sport that they're the most interested in, you know, start there. But I think that all of the websites do a good job in displaying the products. And if you go onto Google and start searching for things that are products within those websites, I think you'll see our ads prominently placed and you'll get a good sense for how we drive traffic to them.
And I'll have links to all Lou's websites in the show notes. So come to the website, cdmcyclist.com. Well, Lou, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thanks a lot, Frank. I'm a big fan of your work.
Bye-bye. We're back in the studio, and, well, more stories come to mind. My recent visit to Portland, I had a wonderful time. Lou took me out on some of the great bike trails, whisk you out of the city so quickly. And we got miles and miles down the road. I was on a borrowed bike. It wasn't fitting me so well. I said, yeah, how about let's turn around. What I'd rather do is go play in traffic. And I visit different cities. I want to get a sense of what the inner city is like and how they accommodate cyclists. So we turned around and zoomed right into Portland. And then later that afternoon, we did this interview when before the day wound down, wanted to take me to Powell's bookstore just a couple of blocks away. And that's where I discovered Bike Snob, the book. And what a delightful find that was. A stocking stuffer for your cycling friends. Bike Snob, as the name implies, is a little barb in there for every bicycle enthusiast. And anyway, so a lot of fond memories. Another classic good time with my long-term friend Lou Doctor. Tickled to have him on the show. As I wrap up here, I'd just like to say, like to invite you to come to the website, cdmcyclist.com. And leave a comment behind, leave your 2 cents worth on today's show. I'd love to hear from you. And I'll be right back in no time. I've got several interviews already in the can, just waiting to be released. So thanks for keeping up with me. Budget a little extra time, huh, over the holidays. I got some great interviews. Got a holiday gift for you coming up in no time. So thanks so much for listening, and good night.